Welcome to the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. I'm Ben Wilson, your host, and I'm sitting down with our minister, Robin King, and we're just sharing a cup of coffee this afternoon, and we're going to be exploring some more stories from the Bible and the New Testament again, but we're kind of moving on from the book of John, which we've been moving through in fairly chronological order over the last month or two. And we're going to be talking about some of Paul's letters. So we're moving on from John to Paul. And no, I'm not talking about the Beatles. We're talking about the New Testament. So, Robin, what are we going to be exploring this week that you might be using in your sermon coming up on Sunday in Basha and Pinoca? We live stream the services back and forth between the two churches. So typically what we do is on this podcast, we talk about the same topic that Robin's going to be exploring further in his sermon on Sunday. What have you got in store for us? How are we moving on from John into some of Paul's letters?
Well, first of all, Ben, I am going to chastise you for all of the language you just used in describing what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, no.
It's not the book of John, it's the Gospel of John, Ben. We don't say New Testament anymore, we say Christian Scripture.
Oh, dear.
And by the way, Letter to the Ephesians wasn't written by Paul.
It wasn't?
No. So here's the thing, though, right? It's easy for me. In fact, how often have you heard churches do what I just did to you, right? I mean, you say something and they, no, it's this.
That's not right.
Yeah, and we get, sometimes I think we've, in the past, not a lot, not so much anymore, although we're still stuck on some things, but in the past we've been very fussy about things and very particular about language and how we describe things. The thing is, personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying anything in the Bible is a book. Just don't say that the Bible's a book, because it's not. It's a library of books.
It's a collection of books.
Right? So whether you use the language of it's the Gospel of John or it's a book or whatever, I don't care. The fact that you even know it's there is awesome. it's just that sometimes we get kind of tied up in that. And the reverse of what I just said is sadly also very true. For example, Paul's letter to the Ephesians. There was a time when it was very definitely by Paul, and in fact, one of the reasons it's in the Bible in the first place probably is because it was connected to Paul. But there's a lot of scholarship now that says there's very good reason to believe that it wasn't written by Paul. But instead, it was actually written a little bit later, and it was probably written by somebody who was possibly a follower of Paul's, but someone certainly who was of the same sort of school, he or she had the same kind of ideas and the same way of approaching things. There are some giveaways that are clearly not Paul. One of which is classically the verse in Ephesians about how wives should subject themselves to their husbands, right? Basically do as they're told because, you know, the husband is the head of the household the way that Jesus is the head of the church. So, you know your place.
Get in line.
Yeah.
That's a very Old Testament.
I personally, and this I'm just going to say it this way because this is what I personally think, although there's scholarship to back this up. I personally think there's not a chance in anywhere that Paul would say that. Because Paul was more about we're all one. It's about equality. It's about.
But come on, back then, gender equality.
But back then, that would have been such an idea that nobody wanted. The men are in charge, right? So somebody else wrote this and put that in, which is too bad because it takes away from the credibility of everything else that's in the letter to the Ephesians, which is actually really quite awesome because the thing is. First of all, these days, not many people know where Ephesus was. That's actually the place, right? Ephesians live in a place called Ephesus.
Right, just like the letter to the Corinthians are people who were from Corinth.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Ephesus was on the coast of what's now Turkey.
Okay.
So way the heck and gone from Jerusalem. Right, and it would have been mostly, if not exclusively, Gentiles. Right, and so the thing about this letter is, first of all, is that it's not written to Jews, and it's written at a time when, in fact, it's important to make the point that the followers of Jesus could be Gentiles. They didn't have to be Jews. In fact, they could be anybody, and in fact it's a fairly significant piece of the letter to the Ephesians, that it's about being the family of Jesus. Which right now I'm kind of leaping ahead to where I was thinking a few minutes ago, but right now this is maybe something worth paying closer attention to, is that we talk a lot about the family of Jesus, the family of Jesus, the family of Jesus, but we talk about it in the context of, I'm Canadian, so-and-so is American, so-and-so is from this country or that country. Nationalism is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're all part of the family of Jesus, does that supersede nationalism? Where do you go with that? Right now, in fact, it's just right now, Canada and Saudi Arabia, right? Saudi Arabia suddenly has a younger leader who is very nationalistic, and he appears to be following a very prominent example from our friends south of the border, and is just blowing up all sorts of really good trade deals with Canada and with things with Canada, because how dare we? Canada questioned the human rights record of Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
And to say that they even have a human rights record is kind of unfair, because they don't have human rights. That's just my opinion, but that's kind of the essence of how they took it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how dare you say anything? And now, because, you know, we are us. Okay, and they're entitled to that. The question is, when does we are us as a nationality or as a specific group become more important than we are part of a world family of people?
We just don't live that
and,
way.
And you don't even have to be, you don't have to be Christian or anything else, any other religious denomination, to have that understanding. Either we're a global community or we're not.
But we, like, really, even in today's age, with how global our world is, with, like, the rise of the internet over the last 20 years has massively transformed how aware we are of what's going on around the world, but we still, in my opinion, we still don't live as though we're one species. It's like, right, we forget that we're, right, all just humans.
Right.
We still have allowed ourselves to remain extremely divided based on, well, nationalism is just an example, but, or based on religion, or based on any other number of things that can segregate and divide.
Yeah. Even, and I don't want to go back to, like, reflect how we started this conversation where I was picking at everything you said, but you just said just humans. We're all just humans.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we are all literally just humans. We may think we're the most significant species on the planet. We might think we're the most significant species in the universe. In fact, frankly, if you're somebody who has the belief that we are who we are and that's it, that there's no higher power than us, I feel badly about that. Because, you know what? If we're the highest power in the universe, God help the rest of the universe. but, excuse me, but that's the thing about this letter to the Ephesians. Most scholarship now says it's probably not by Paul. In fact, it probably wasn't written specifically to people at Ephesus. The oldest existing copy of the text that we have says that the letter is written to people of, and it's blank.
Really? So where did they come up with Ephesus?
At some point somebody said Ephesus, and it stuck, right? Huh. But it may not have even, and the thing about that is that it's not a letter to people at Ephesus. It's, wait a minute, what does that mean then? Was it in fact intended, like the other letters from Paul, like the letter to the Corinthians, for instance, it's clear when you read it that Paul is responding to a letter that's been sent to him that we don't have.
Right.
But he's responding, or some kind of communication. He's responding to hearing something about what's going on in Corinth. But the letter to the Ephesians isn't that. So is it now fair to assume, I know assuming's bad, but is it fair to then extrapolate from that this was a letter that was written intentionally, not in response to something, but intentionally to make a point that could have been distributed to anyone, any Christian community, actually anyone, but any Christian community.
So this was, well, whoever the author was, if it wasn't Paul, they were making a PSA. That's just a public service announcement to all Christians out there in the world.
Yes, but okay, let's go with that. It starts off, the first few chapters talk about, talk a little bit about doctrine and theology and stuff, but then it goes into, and this is the passage, if you're following the lectionary, the passage we have on Sunday, almost, it almost recaps the Ten Commandments, kind of. Like, it goes through some things about, thieves shouldn't steal, they should work, right? And they should want to share what they gain from their work, right? We should be honest with each other. It's not even just a don't lie, it's a be honest, but be honest with love and kindness, right? And it goes on various things, ways that we should behave, but it connects that behavior to a very fundamental principle, which I've always thought was the fundamental principle of the Ten Commandments in the first place. Everything seems to be around creating community, that we live in community. That whatever it is that we are doing, that this behavior isn't just behavior, it's transformative and it's part of being community. It's connected to what's at the heart of the gospel, right? And so it goes, and eventually at some point, the writer of this letter goes, be imitators of God, is the phrase that they use. Be imitators of God. And to me, that again, that just kind of evokes created in the image of God.
Right.
And so if we are created in the image of God, it's not just a question of behavior. We are inherently, our default setting is what I usually say, right? Our default setting is good.
Yeah.
We are inherently good. So let's connect that to our behavior. Yeah, and I think the writer of the letter is kind of saying that's the point, is that it's not about behavior. It's about it being transformative and being it's your life, right?
One thing that stood out to me that you just said was in that translation of be imitators of God, it's almost unfortunate that that word is used, that imitators, because in my mind, a behavior that is imitation, that kind of makes you think about an inauthentic way of being, or like putting on a behavior, or, you know, which is in opposition of being your true self, being expressing your true nature. Imitate this, model this, pretend this. Like we, so you know the movie The Greatest Showman, when P.T. Barnum brings Philip Carlyle into the circus and he's introducing him to everybody, and the brother and sister that are the trapeze act.
Yeah,
and he's like love at first sight, blah blah blah. He sees this gorgeous girl and she says, Mr. Carlyle, what's your act? And he says, oh, I don't have an act. And her response is, everybody has an act.
Yeah.
And of course, it's getting at the root of that whole film, which is who are we being versus who are we really?
Yeah.
And so most of us then in that time period and still today, we all have this act or this way of being so that people will perceive us a certain way. And it's often
right.
Incongruous with who we really are. So this striving for being authentic or being vulnerable or being our true selves and letting people actually see who we really are often has this screen in front of it, or this facade or mask, or it's part of the human condition, I guess. But it's interesting to me that it says be imitators of God versus maybe using language that is more in line with what you're saying, which is that God within each of us is our true nature, is our true self. So be your true self.
I think that's actually what he is trying to say.
I'm sure it's what the intention is.
Or she, whoever is trying to say. Yeah.
Language.
Because there's an irony to your example there too, right? Which is that the classic understanding of the story of P.T. Barnum is that he was not particularly philanthropic. He was using them to make money. But in the movie, the way they tell the story is he was providing an opportunity for people to be themselves.
Yeah.
So in part, it's also about how you tell the story.
Yeah, that's right? True.
And which I think also then, but that also goes back to how we tell the story as followers of Jesus, tell the story. The story isn't about, we just had this last week, right? And you said we'd move on from the Gospel of John, but I'm going to go back now. Okay. Just for a second, though, because the last piece that we had from John was about Jesus being the bread of life, right? Mm-hmm. And the story of how after the miracle of feeding the multitude, right, which however you understand the miracle, and it is actually, in fact, appropriate to understand it as a question of sharing that builds community, because that's basically what the letter to the Ephesians is about, community. But however you understand that, the story continues with those same people coming to Jesus and saying, "Give us, if you're who you say you are, give us a sign." Right? Give us a sign. And I mean, that's like, I've always kind of read that and go, like, either Jesus was divinely patient, or, you know, he did a face palm and, like, why didn't you guys understand? You just watched me do a bunch of stuff, and I just did a sign where, you know, there was a sign for you. Instead, they give him the example of Moses feeding the Israelites in the wilderness with manna. And again, it depends on how you tell the story, because then Jesus has to point out that's not what happened. Moses didn't feed the Israelites in the wilderness. It was God that did it. And in fact, goes on to say, I am the manna, right? I am the bread of life.
Jesus, not the baker.
Right? Yeah, I'm not the baker. I'm the bread of life. And in fact, you can be too, right?
Yeah.
When we are fed by the bread of life, we can feed others, right? And again, here we are with this person, whoever wrote this letter to the Ephesians, or to whomever it's to, is again trying to connect behavior and heart, right? Behavior is one thing. You can act all you want. In fact, that's a classic self-help thing, right? You know, fake it until you make it.
Right.
Right? And I imagine whoever wrote this letter to the Ephesians would go, no, damn it. No. Because you can make it right now. You don't have to fake it.
Yeah.
You can make it. All you need to understand is how God is within us, that we are created in the image of God. And when he says, I think when he says imitators, be imitators of God, I think he doesn't mean behave like God. And because how many problems would that create?
Yeah.
We have enough people in the world who already think they're God. But instead, I think what he means is, or she means, we are created in the image. And this, sorry, it just occurs to me the number of times that I've referred to the writer of Ephesians and either said he and then gone, or she, or said whomever.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's the thing, is that the writer of this could have been anybody. Are we going to dismiss it because it's not Paul now? Or has it less credibility because the person, whoever wrote this, was clearly inspired.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the Bible, right? Is it the literal word of God, or is it the inspired word of God? What is it? Clearly whoever wrote this was inspired by the very thing that Jesus wants us to be inspired by, the idea that God is within us.
Yeah.
And that in connecting to that spirit, it becomes not behavior, but transformation.
Right.
Right? We are transformed by connecting the two pieces. Right? And I've just, sorry, I had to, because I have not memorized the Bible, I just had to call this up on my laptop, because there were a couple of things that he says that I think, or she says, that are particularly appropriate to where we're at in the world right now, right? One of which is, let no evil talk come out of your mouth. I'm using the New Revised Standard translation. Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up, as there is need, so that your words may give grace to those who hear. World politics, and particularly in certain countries, all countries, would be a fine example of how we don't do that.
Absolutely.
Because politics in most places in the world has become less about the issue and more about me attacking my opponent personally in order to defeat their idea.
Yeah.
Instead of attacking their idea in order to defeat the person. Right? We've completely moved away from that.
Even back to what you were saying about who the real author is, you know, what if it was revealed that, it wasn't Paul, it was a woman,
Fred from down the street, or Frida
a woman
from down
named
the street,
Paula,
sure,
yeah, or Frida. And then, are we going to discredit the entire contents of that letter because it was written by a woman, or because it wasn't who we thought it was.
And oddly enough, if we were continuing in the Gospel of John, our discussion of the Gospel of John, the next piece in the lectionary from the Gospel of John is how Jesus says, "I am the bread of life." And the first thing that the people listening, some of them do, is, "Wait a minute, who do you think you are saying that?" And it harkens back to that, you know, that story of Jesus preaching in his own home synagogue, mm-hmm. and people saying, "Who do you think you are saying that? Because we know who you are. You're the carpenter from down the street, right?" Mm-hmm. But it's that same, "Who do you think you are?" saying stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've focused on the person in order to dismiss what is probably a meaningful thing that they said that we just didn't want to hear.
Right.
And you can imagine, whether it's in the first century or today, how much people want to hear things like, "Put away falsehood and let us all speak the truth to our neighbors, for we are members of one another."
That's a lot harder to do.
Yeah. "Be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger." Whoever wrote this is acknowledging that we can be angry. That's okay.
Yeah, that we're going to.
It depends on what you do with it.
Human. Yeah.
Either you let your anger have meaning and do good, or you let it be destructive.
Yeah.
Right? Simply be destructive. And obviously what this person is saying is, it's okay to be angry because we're human beings. It's absolutely okay. But there maybe are times where, A, you want to maybe think twice about how you express it. And B, you don't want it to ever be destructive. You want it to be in some way, or you want it to be, if it's going to be destructive, in a way that is constructive eventually, right? Mm-hmm. That it's kind of like the refiner's fire. It burns away the things that are bad in order to get to the good things, right?
Yeah, and to not let it fester. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so, okay, personal example. In, 9 years of being married, Kelly and I have had some fights. At the beginning of our...
Does she know that?
I think so.
Okay.
They were pretty clearly fights. Yeah. But our fights have gotten a lot different. At the beginning, I used to be, like when we were first married, I was so scared of having any kind of confrontation or conflict or argument even, or thought the sky was falling. And it's taken time to learn how to fight or how to have conflict that eventually led to a really positive resolution, right, and healing and growth, to the point where you were actually grateful for the fight.
Yep.
Where it was, man, I'm glad we fought about that. Versus early on in marriage, thinking that the goal of a healthy marriage was
to
never have conflict, yeah, to never have fight. So that's been a transformative thing for me.
Right. Right. And so it's not even about, it's not like you've learned the techniques of and mm-hmm. behave a certain way in order to attain a certain goal. It's become part of who you are. That's the transformative part. Yeah,
exactly. And right. And the only way for that to have been possible was to live it, to go through it. But the reason I brought it up was that Kelly and I kind of have this thing where even, earlier on in our marriage, when fights were more challenging, we would still try our absolute best to not go to bed angry.
Mm-hmm.
So we would resolve it. We would work it through. We would talk it through. And I like what that scripture is saying, where, what does it say? Do not let the sun
go down on your anger.
Yeah, be angry, but don't let the sun go down on your anger. Like, resolve it, work mm-hmm. through it. It's an acknowledgement that you're going to have these human emotions and feelings and troubles. But you also have a choice to make in working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And be kind. Mm-hmm. I mean, the writer of this goes on to say, be kind to one another, be tenderhearted, forgiving one another. Again, though, all of these things are connected to be imitators of God. And doesn't just stop with be imitators of God, but live in love as Christ loved us and gave himself for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. It's, the colorful language, but basically saying it's not just about being an imitation, an image of God. It's about seeing how that is lived out in Jesus, right? Love one another as I have shown you to love,
mm-hmm.
right? Again, it's not just about even that story. It's not just about behavior. It's about love being life. It's life-giving, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a learned behavior. And there's so much. It's one of those things where I would really like somebody should maybe point this out to, say, some of our politicians, particularly things about being honest and telling the truth.
That's not allowed in politics.
You know, there used to be a time when we'd say stuff like that. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, even when this was written, politics is what it's what it is, right? It's often manipulative. It's often, you know, to get a particular, you have an idea and you're going to ensure that that happens. That kind of, sure, okay. But we've reached a point now where somebody can literally stand in front of a crowd of people and lie, and they'll cheer them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, it's not just a question of being dishonest in, you know, the old school way of, you know, you keep it hidden dishonest, but to stand up in front of people and say something that is factually incorrect.
And knowingly.
And do it knowingly. Knowing that you are saying it to a group of people who will cheer you on and believe it because you said it.
Yeah.
That's more the don't be an imitator of God, be God to them. And that is just not what this is about. It's not what anything ought to be about. It ought to be about finding that God of love that's life-giving and connects us all and creates community. In all of us, is in us, and connecting to that and letting that be our behavior and letting that be transformative.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we should maybe wrap it up here, Robin. I think so much of what we talked about and what you said today makes me think about why we're creating this podcast and why we're creating this Six Ways from Sunday community. And it's because we want to encourage and inspire people to see God in themselves and in others and to live out that love. And in so doing, building and creating community. Not just the online community that we're talking about, but just whatever community they're a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's online, in their physical community, in their circle of family and friends. We want that message to have an impact on people's lives and that only can happen if they're, living it out. So hopefully some of this conversation has inspired some of that in your life, whoever is listening to this. And we'd love to hear from you if you have thoughts on things that this has made you think about, or as always, other conversations or ideas for topics that Robin and I could discuss in the future. So thank you, Robin, for this conversation.
Thanks, Ben.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.